So let me move towards our last small conversation with a story about loving and about the transformation of shadow that I actually love to tell under the wedding canopy. And if there's anyone here who would like to get married, I'm willing to tell the story. So here it goes. It's almost the most beautiful, beautiful shadow story in the world. Chaim of Tzanz was the great, great master in the Hasidic world. Mamash, the holiest, holiest, holiest master in the world. And he used to sit every day, every night in the Beit Midrash. And in the Beit Midrash, he would just study so beautifully. His voice was so sweet and it was so special. And one night, traveling through Tzanz, there was a businessman, what Heidegger calls a busy, busy businessman, right? Who's looking for a shidduch, looking for a match for his daughter. And he gets to town at like 2 a.m, and he passes by the study hall, and he hears the sweetest, most beautiful voice you can imagine emerging from the study hall. And he goes in, and he sees Chaim of Tzanz, right, sitting there studying in the most beautiful possible way. And he says, "Gevein l'shidduch," right? I'm looking for a shidduch for my daughter. And Chaim of Tzanz says, "Are you sure you want me?" And he says, "Yes, I'm sure I want you. I heard you study. Your voice was so pure, so sweet, so beautiful. You are absolutely the chatan. You are the intended of my daughter." His daughter's, of course, not present in this story. She'll appear a little later. A year goes by, and it's time to have the wedding. So the daughter travels with her family, as was the custom, to the town of Tzanz. Right, Chaim of Tzanz was the inheritor of a great Hasidic dynasty. He was a great young master, right, of enormous, enormous spiritual power. But this young woman actually wanted to see him before the wedding. Kind of audacious thought the families. But she insisted, and they said no. So she asked someone in town, "Well, listen, is there someplace I could see him kind of without him knowing?" So they said to her, "You know, every Friday morning, he goes to the mikveh, to the ritual bath. When he walks out of the mikveh after he gets dressed, he walks from there to the Beit Midrash. You could watch him walk from the mikveh, the ritual bath building, right to the study hall building." She gets up early in the morning, and she sees him, right, walking out of the mikveh, the ritual bath building, towards the study hall building, and his entire left leg is totally, absolutely crippled. Disfigured, crippled in the worst way. Because, of course, her father had only seen him sitting in his perch in the study hall. She's aghast. She runs home to her father and says, "You fooled me? You didn't tell me? Right? I absolutely refused to marry him. Call off the wedding. The wedding is tomorrow. Call off the wedding. I will not marry him." So they speak to her, and the rabbi speaks to her, and her father speaks to her, and her mother speaks to her, and her grandmother speaks to her, and she is adamant the wedding will not take place. No one can budge her. Of course, you cannot force a man or a woman to get married against their will. So they're about to call off the wedding. They send word to the Tzanzer, to Chaim of Tzanz, the great master, that the wedding is about to be called off. He says, "Ich verstehe," and I understand her. "I have just one request. Please send her my one request." "What is it?" "I'd like to be alone with her in a room for 3 minutes, and the only thing I want in the room is a large mirror." Strange request from a young Hasidic master. Probably a violation of Jewish law. You're not allowed to be together alone, right, before marriage in classical law. And yet, the circumstances are extreme. The request is granted. They enter the room. She says, "Tell him I'm not going to marry him, but I don't want to refuse this one request. I'll grant him the request, but under no circumstances should he try and convince me to marry him. Right? I'll honor him with this request." They enter the room. She looks at him. He looks at her. He doesn't say anything. He says, "Look in the mirror." She looks in the mirror and she screams because the entire disfigurement and crippledness of his left leg is not on him, but on her. And she looks at him and her mouth drops open. And he says in the kindest, gentlest voice you can imagine, he says, "When I was 15, 16, right, I so needed to know who my soulmate was. And I begged and pleaded in the heavens. that they should let me know your name. And finally, against all the rules of heaven, they send me your name in a dream. And your name just so excited me, so aroused, right, my holy passion and my love. I needed to see you. I could wait for the match. I needed to see you. Please let me see you. And you weren't born yet, but I needed to see you. And the angels refused. So I took it to the higher angels and until it got to God himself. And God granted me one moment I'd be allowed to see you. And I saw that you were born disfigured and crippled. And it ripped my heart apart. Right? Disfigured, crippled. How could it be? How could it be? How could it be? And I began to cry and to pray and to cry and to pray and to storm heaven. And for 40 days and 40 nights, right, I stormed and prayed and cried until they allowed a special decree in heaven. Your weakness, your crippledness, I was allowed to take upon me. And they were married. And the story is told in the Tsanzer dynasty, right? This was the great marriage that produced, right, the great dynasty and the greatest books and the greatest songs of Tzanz Chassidut. We think that the love of marriage is to find the perfect person. And if only we find the perfect person, then we'll stay. But what love is the power of the gorgeous and holy feminine to receive other in all of their shadow, in all of their darkness, in all of their crippledness, and all of their moishel of the ganaf, and in that love to transform the person and move them to healing, to tikkun, and to wholeness. Right? That's what loving is. That's what it means to be a lover. To be a lover is to enter the darkness and transform it. To be a self-lover is to enter my own darkness and to transform my own darkness. Every Jewish ritual revolves around rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem, right? Shibaneh Beit HaMikdash. You've read it, heard it someplace, right? The temple should be rebuilt. Who's heard that someplace? Anyone, show of hands. Who's heard that? Who's heard that idea to rebuild the temple? Yeah? Everyone's heard it? Let me ask you a question, just between us, and I promise we'll keep it very quiet. How many people woke up this morning and said, oh my God, where is the temple in Jerusalem? What am I going to do? Right? Maya? Right? Okay, so one, okay? Seek therapy, okay? Right? What does that mean? Right? What does it mean? I mean, it's kind of a strange idea, right? Remember, I always come back to Thucydides, which is so important, right? Almost every talk, when words lose their meaning, culture collapses. What's the temple? Who cares about the temple? Right? I mean, it must be kind of some, I don't know, you know, contractor's lobby, right? That's looking for a big contract that's pushing this kind of building thing in Jerusalem. When we talk about the temple in Jerusalem, what do we mean? Right, what is the kind of archetype, image, symbol, right, power, right, of the temple? So the temple, in its most core way, we don't have time to really learn it now, but just to tell you one half a word, just a half a word. In the temple, the major offering, the major mystical ceremony, was the ceremony of the incense, of the ketoret, the incense. And the incense of the temple were made up of a large array of very powerful, beautiful incense, which included in them what was called the chelbana, which was this horribly smelling, pungent, rancid, terrible smell. But in combination with the other 11 spices, it became the most stunningly beautiful fragrance, right, available to humankind. Better even than fill in the gap. Okay? So that's called Ketira Dekala in the Zohar. It's the Ketoret, it's the incense that embraces the darkness and transforms the darkness into the most beautiful fragrance possible. Now watch for a second. Here's the point. Why is the temple destroyed? Why is our eternal temple destroyed? The temple is destroyed, according to the Talmudic text, and some of you may remember this text, some of you may have heard it again in this incarnation, in a different incarnation, in the next incarnation. It's a beautiful text. The temple is destroyed, according to the Talmud, because there's a party held in Jerusalem. And at this party, right, held by Kamtza, a man named Kamtza, K-A-M-T-Z-A, invitations are sent, and somehow or another, there's a mistake made, and a man named Bar Kamtza,
Right? Bar Kamtsa, son of Kamtsa, right? Bar Kamtsa is invited to the party, who is the arch enemy of Kamtsa. So Kamtsa makes a party, and somehow there's a mistake in the invitations, and Bar Kamtsa, his arch enemy, is invited to the feast. His arch enemy is invited to the feast. He sees him and he says, "Get out of here." And Bar Kamtsa says, "Don't embarrass me publicly, and I'll pay you for half the party. Right, just let me stay." He says, "Forget about half the party, you're out. Right, leave." And he says, "I'll pay you for the whole party. Right, just let me stay, don't embarrass me publicly." He says, "Get out of here." And in the end, he's thrown out of the party. The rabbis don't do anything because Kamtsa was a major contributor to their institutions, right? Says the Talmud, okay? Right? Rabbis always have to be people who speak truth to power. The second the rabbi stops speaking truth to power, the rabbi stops being a rabbi. Right? That's always what it's about. Okay? So the rabbis, the rabbinic community, is silent. And somehow, a chain of events is set into motion which causes the destruction of the temple. Let me ask you a question. Who are Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa? I want to make to you the simplest suggestion. And this is the interpretation also of the Talmudic passage we talked about. Right, the simplest suggestion. Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa are the same person. They're the same person. Kamtsa is his light side. My light side, my polite side, my appropriate side, my cultured side, I want to show up at a party. But I don't want my Bar Kamtsa side to show up at a party. Bar in Hebrew means wild. My wild Kamtsa side, my primal Kamtsa side, my passion, unfettered Kamtsa side, we don't want him at a party. And he says, "Please let me stay. I'll pay you for half the meal. But you can get a lot from me." We throw him out. We're afraid. "I'll pay you for the whole meal." We throw him out. And the rabbis, right, our educational systems, teach us only how to discipline, but not how to integrate, not how to love, not how to transform shadow. Right? So it doesn't work. Our temple is destroyed. It's only when we can invite Bar Kamtsa, right, to our public feast, integrated and part of who we are, that we can build the temple. It's all about the mud. It's all about the dark places.